Welcome to the Swing Set. Climb on up. There is always a swing available. On Life on the Swing Set, the podcast, we explore ethically non-monogamous relationships, the pleasures and passions, the promise and pitfalls. We discuss all aspects of ethical non-monogamy in a fun, open, and welcoming fashion, with a gleam in our eye, a bounce in our step, our hands down your pants. Ooh, sorry, got ahead of myself. We may be biased. In fact, we most certainly are. But we don't sugarcoat, and each of us speaks honestly and earnestly about our thoughts, ideas, and experiences throughout our very own lives on the swing set. Thanks for swinging by.
Fellas, are you looking to spice things up in the bedroom? Been fantasizing about surprising your lover with an adventurous new toy or adult movie? Well, here's an offer you won't be able to resist. Go to adamandeve.com and for a limited time only, you'll get 50% off just about any item. But that's not all. Oh no, when you select your one item at 50% off, you'll also receive 3 free adult DVDs for a little inspiration. Plus a free extra gift so essential we can't mention it on the radio. And to top it all off, we'll even throw in free shipping on your entire order. And no, we're not teasing. So go to adamandeve.com today for the special offer. Get 50% off one item when you type swing set for the offer code upon checkout. When you do, you'll get 3 free DVDs, a free extra gift, and free shipping. Just use the offer code SWINGSET at adamandeve.com.
Welcome to Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. There are a lot of things that divide us in this world, issues that come up and cause people to choose sides for or against. But one thing that seems to unify us is the fact that whether we admit to it or not, the vast majority of the world likes watching naked people doing dirty things. That's right, sexy friends. Tonight we're talking about porn in all its glory, what we like and don't, our first glimpses, the pros and cons of one of the most pervasive industries in the world. I'm Cooper Beckett, and tonight I have with me...
Hey everybody, it's Ginger.
Hey, it's Dylan.
And this is Shira B. Katz.
So before we get started, does anyone have any business?
I don't have any business.
I've got a little something that I found on Engadget. A chip that they're testing that costs a dollar that will test for HIV in 15 minutes and will fit in your wallet. All it takes is one drop of blood and it will give you a pass-fail. Isn't that fascinating?
Indeed, it is fascinating. It also mentions that it will confirm whether or not you have syphilis.
Indeed, yeah. So we're getting close to a point where you could conceivably have a credit card sized item that before you have sex with someone, you can test them.
Which wouldn't make up for the 6 month waiting time or show up time that HIV has, right?
Well, no.
I'm just throwing that out.
There might be a lot of education behind this, but I don't see any real downside to this. If people are going to be careless and not worry about like a 6 month cooldown, or if they're not going to worry about stuff like that, then this won't make them that much safer. But
I mean, really, it's not going to amount to anything different than someone walking out of the AIDS testing center with a clean bill of health and saying to a potential playmate, "I have a clean bill of health."
No, I think any progress is definitely good progress. I just think that people would be more tempted to be a little bit more frivolous if something like this was so easy to obtain, I guess.
Interesting. Best part is it only costs a dollar, which is interesting because the article doesn't say when it's available, so I'm not sure how they got it. An actual price on it, because usually they talk about this awesome new technology and they tell you how ridiculously expensive the prototype is and say right. It'll be available for you sometime maybe in 2 or 3 decades.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But this doesn't really do that. So this is very interesting, and I'm very interested. It's called the M-Chip. And it's researchers at Columbia University claim it has 100% detection rate, although there's a 4 to 6% chance of getting a false positive, which is very similar to traditional lab results. So,
I think it has interesting interesting implications for things that aren't necessarily immediately sexual gratification based, but maybe people who wouldn't or otherwise be able to go get checked, or people who would be hesitant because of embarrassment issues, people who don't have health insurance or things like that, they might be able to check themselves easier at their own comfort. And that sounds really awesome for the community.
Absolutely.
Agreed. Accessibility is important.
So before we were recording, we were talking about pubic hair.
And oh, yeah.
How we're wondering if it's possibly making a resurgence. And I think that's an interesting place to start, since really I think that porn killed pubic hair.
That makes me so sad. I'm a big fan of pubic hair myself.
Me too.
Yes, I'm raising my hand. Me too. Big fan.
Dylan, are you the fourth out of four swing set hosts that don't like pubic hair?
I don't mind. I'm not for or against, to tell you the truth.
Okay.
I just like people that to be well kept, whether that means they've got a nicely coiffed fro or a baby soft service. I'm okay with either one.
You know what I will say is I think that my position on this has changed drastically with my age. I remember from the time of being very, very young, 11 or 12 years old, and thinking just guys with hairy chests and hairy backs, ew, gross, and then moving on till I was around 18 to 20 and thinking that pubic hair had to go, trimming, and everyone should be bald, and that makes things so much better. And I don't know if it's a hormonal thing as you hit I'm rounding about to 30 about right now, and I don't know, but I my entire mood about the whole thing has changed as I've gotten a little older.
I wonder if it is a hormonal thing, because pubic hair does help trap the pheromones in. And the hairiness is the sign of procreation time.
And maturity. I think, another thing that I've noticed, I've started being interested in much, much older ranges than before. Just in the past year, I think that my cap on ages for what I'm out there looking for anymore, both the low cap and the high cap have both shot up 10 years just in the last year. I no longer have any tolerance for young people, and I'm really extra super duper attracted to those silverback gorillas out there for some reason.
I like no tolerance for young people.
I don't know what's happening, but just I can't get down with some college kids anymore. It's making me
as long as they see off your lawn, right?
Oh yeah, that's right. That's precisely correct, in fact.
So, I think I want to start with our experience with porn. I don't think it's hard to say that we all enjoy our fair share, and probably a few other people's fair share of porn.
That is true. I would agree with that.
So, our experience, I think the way you come to porn can help define your sexuality. And it depends on, it can define your likes, your dislikes, the way you first find it and discover it. And that doesn't necessarily have to be porn. That can also be the way you first discover sexuality in film. But I'd like to go back and take a stroll down memory lane with all of us and remember our first encounter with porn. And this can be magazine, it can be movie, whatever we'd like. So I'm going to go with Shirby Katz first.
Oh, I get to go first. I was going to call you out, Cooper, but
okay. You can call me out. I can go if you'd like to call me out.
No, I have some stories, but I would love to hear how you got into all this. You being the mastermind and the great alpha leader around here, you must have a very particularly interesting story.
I think she means the silverback gorilla.
I think she does.
Yeah, that's right.
And she did just talk about how much she likes those. So
there you go.
I'm feeling pretty good. So are you saying you'd like me to go first? Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, Cooper.
Okay, I'm going to actually grab the first porno magazine I ever saw.
You still have it?
I don't still have it.
Oh, okay.
I re-got it. So, Shiri, you tell your story. I'll be right back.
Okay, so I think that my very first exposure to pornography, it's a little hard for me to pin down because I grew up in Las Vegas, so you're pretty much always exposed to...
Did you get the porno playing cards that they, like the trading cards that they pass
yeah,
out
sure.
on the corner?
So as a kid, you're walking down the streets and those are kind of like in the gutters or whatever, right? And it wasn't a rare occurrence. Like the very first piece of like homemade porn that I ever saw was just kind of walking down the street in Vegas. And let me mind you, I didn't grow up in the greatest places in Vegas. So there are some lovely, lovely places in Las Vegas. Wonderful places like Green Valley and everything where... This would never happen to your children, so I don't mean to offend the natives of Vegas, but I grew up in kind of the slummier places. So there would always be, like, those playing cards, yeah, like you said, Cooper, in the streets. But also, like, just, I think the very first thing I ever found was I was walking down the street. I was kind of outside my apartment complex. I lived near the Hard Rock Cafe at the time, and I found a Polaroid on the ground, and I picked it up, and it was just this big black dick, and it was enormous, and there was like no face. It was just like a body shot, and I must have been about like 11 years old, and I was just like baffled, because first off, I haven't seen very many penises, and it was a black penis, and I totally blew my mind, and it was like pink in spots and red in spots and dark in others, and I was like, oh my god. So that was my very first exposure to finding pornography, found it in the streets in Las Vegas.
In the streets.
Yeah.
I do have stories of finding porn magazines and torn out pages in weird Chicago city alleys and behind train tracks and stuff. But my first encounter, and it was very vivid to me because, Who Framed Roger Rabbit had just come out. And for a young boy, that was the first real opportunity to see full sex in a movie. And I don't say actual sex. I'm saying Jessica Rabbit represented sex.
Sure.
To us.
Sure.
And so, in my father's bedroom, he had, September 1988 Playboy with Jessica Hahn on the cover. And so the name Jessica had stood out for me. And I took a look at it, and I vividly, vividly remembered the centerfold model, Laura Richmond, and this shot where it looks like a Cinemax shot because it's like through blinds. So you see these, black, blinds in front of the picture. And, it just, for years afterwards, that image remained as the image of what's in Playboy to me. And so like 5 years ago, I was on eBay and just looking around at stuff, and I saw a seller that was selling old Playboys, and I thought, well, I could probably find it because I knew Jessica Hahn was on the cover. And so I went and I tracked it down, and I ordered the very first Playboy I ever saw, which I think is kind of cool.
That's kind of sweet. And a very interesting turn on nostalgia.
But it is amazing to me how vividly that image stayed in my mind, because as soon as I flipped through the magazine just recently, there was no question that that was the picture that I remembered, you know, and it was over two decades. Two decades since seeing it last, which I find fascinating that it was such an indelible thing. And I suppose you could look at that and say, look at the mark that this nudity has left on this young boy. And I'm sure that's where they would go. But for me, it was a joyful thing.
I had a similar experience, except for my trigger, it was a word. When I was young, I found some of my father's pornographic magazines, and of course, like a good little girl,
I like the way you dipped your audio down a little bit for pornographic.
Pornographic.
You're taking that's the way Dylan used to say things on the show. Is, you know, he'd get all loud and boisterous until something, you know, a little secretive came in. He'd go low.
Well, yes.
This one I remember very specifically was called, I think it was Red Fly, was what it was called. It was Red Fly Magazine, and it had stories as well as pictures. And that was where I first read the word, hard-on. And for some fucking reason, that was the most dirty, scandalous word to me. And even to this day, it rings. Like, it might sound silly to other people, but for me, the words hard-on is just so totally hot.
You know, it's amazing you say something like that, because that just brought back that before this Playboy here, I was reading the novel Jaws.
Uh-huh.
And the big difference between the novel and the movie is, for whatever reason, unimportant to the story, but it happens, Hooper, Richard Dreyfuss's character, has an affair with Brody's wife. And there's a scene where they go to lunch, and Hooper says, you know, maybe on the way home, I'll leave my fly open. And, Ellen Brody gets all excited, but then has this dream of, you know, what if they crash and her skirt is hiked up and her, I remember this vividly, her vagina is wet, glistening, yawning open for the world to see.
Oh, dear.
That turn of phrase, and this was another one of those things that I revisited recently, I'm amazed that specifically, word for word, I remembered exactly what that said, and it was such an impact.
Yeah, words will do that.
And because my parents did not expect filthiness from Jaws, the novel.
Right.
now it's Ginger's turn.
It's my turn.
It's your turn.
Your first porn story.
Tell me about porn in your life.
Well, it's funny because I was a spectacularly late bloomer, and I still, you can't see it, but you might be able to hear it in my voice that I still blush when I tell this story, because it's
I can hear the blush in your voice.
You can or can't?
I can, mostly because I've seen you, I've been with you when you have blushed. But I can totally, totally.
Yeah. So I was a spectacularly late bloomer and had a boyfriend who became a friend who became a boyfriend who then became a friend again. And when I was 18 years old, he and I, I'm trying to think if there were other people involved in the conversation. I think there were other people involved in the initial conversation about porn. And they were saying that people actually had sex in porn. And I argued against that and said, people wouldn't do that. People don't have sex for the camera. That's crazy. I was 18 years old and was believing this wholeheartedly and was incredulous that they were thinking that there was actual sex happening in a movie. And he then took me aside kind of after the fact and was like, you're going to watch some porn. And I was just like, no way, no way. And he said, yep, you're going to watch some porn. And I went to his dorm room and he put porn on his little TV VCR combo. I wasn't sure. It wasn't something that he purchased, or maybe it was something that he purchased.
Was it Magnavox?
Was it Magnavox? I don't know. I was going to say the porn might have been like...
See, Ginger's telling a sexy porn story, and Dylan's wondering the brand of the VHS tape that it was recorded on.
Yeah.
It's a dumb joke. Just let it go.
I don't remember that detail. But it was very... It wasn't like high production porn. It was like, you know, probably $5 grab bag bin in the back of the shop or something like that. And so he puts the tape in and I'm freaking out. I'm just like, what if people actually really do have sex and I'm about to watch this. I'm freaking out. And sure enough, like, you know, it was probably queued up to right where he finished last time. And there it was. And there was porn. And they were actually having sex. And he literally, I watched for a little while. And he was laughing at me the entire time. And he finally shut it off and realized that I was sort of shocked and traumatized, and he needed to backpedal a little bit, which he did, and was very sensitive and gentle about it. But he actually said to me after the fact, I couldn't let you go on thinking that was true the rest of your life. And I was thinking, I think to myself fairly regularly now, that if he only knew now what he may have uncorked, he doesn't know. But so that's the story. And wow. I still, it, kind of like you were saying, Coop, and you too, Shira, it's like those, the image is burned in my brain. And it was a very meaningful experience, and I think back on it, and it wasn't, I say shock and trauma, but it was more about just the realization, wow, people actually have sex on camera. And it wasn't disgust, or it wasn't negative in that sense. It was just awe. in you know what I mean, like in an open sort of way. It was just more like, wow, that's amazing. And it was food for thought for a very long time after that, all through college.
Ginger, I think we just told bookend stories there.
You and I. I think you're right. No?
So, Dylan, it's your turn.
Yeah, Dylan, what was your first experience with porn? I know you had that whole Catholic thing that seemed to weigh heavier on you than it did on me.
It still weighs heavily on me. I just worked 50 hours at a Catholic school over the weekend, so it's with my wife, of course, so it still weighs heavily on me. But my first experience with pornography, RoboCop.
Interesting.
Because there was everything pornographic about somebody dashing a little bit of confectioner's sugar on somebody's breasts and licking it right off. That was the first sexual moment I've ever had with anything visual or audio or anything like that. It was very hot, too. I've actually gone back and watched it a couple times, and I still have good memories of that. And you know what? Now that I think of it, I have not actually replicated that. I totally should.
You should. It's a pretty easy one to do. Now, do you connect your sexuality to, you know, horrendous violence, people melting, and I'd buy that for a dollar?
I haven't quite gotten into that side of my sex life yet, but we'll see where things end.
Well, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about porn and the influence on us and the influence on the world. Coming right back. Life on the Swing Set, the podcast.
Hello, listeners. You know, a lot of sex toys come across our desks here at Life on the Swing Set. Some of them are good, but many are forgettable. Then there are the products from close to you. These toys are musically named because music is the language of passion. They rise to the top, superior instruments of pleasure that you can't wait to play with again and again. Close to You's entire line of toys are the cream of the crop. Their vibrators and anal beads are elegant, soft, and most wonderfully waterproof. Pick up Close to You's Symphonia Vibrator today at EdenFantasies.com.
Hey, Cooper, guess what?
What's that, Shira?
I just found the most amazingly sex-positive, eco-friendly, progressive, female-run sex shop.
Oh, really? This place sounds great. Who are these people, and how did they get the elusive Shira B. Cat stamp of approval?
They have the cutest name. They're called Smitten Kitten. Their brick-and-mortar store is located in Minneapolis, and their online shop is located at www.smittenkittenonline.com. They specialize in high-quality sex toys and equipment for people of all genders and sexual orientations. Handmade, one-of-a-kind items, non-toxic, medical-grade toys, educational books and DVDs, and even ethically produced porn on demand.
Oh, Shira.
What?
Get with the times! Everybody knows about SmittenKittenOnline.com. In fact, Life on the Swing Set has partnered with Smitten Kitten to give all of our listeners a 10% discount when they buy items from their online store. All our listeners have to do is enter the code SWINGSET at checkout, and boom! Discount.
No way. I can use it too? They have the super hot harness I got my eye on.
Absolutely. In fact, I invite you and all of our listeners to go to smittenkittenonline.com and use the product code SWINGSET. Not only will you get 10% off your purchase, but you'll also be supporting one of the most progressive and sex-positive businesses in the industry.
All right, Cooper, I'm on it. www.smittenkittenonline.com. Discount code SWINGSET.
You'll be glad you came.
So we're back, and we're talking about pornography. And one of the things that I hear all of the time from people in the vanilla world, and even people who aren't in the vanilla world, surprisingly enough, is a lot of people, particularly women, turn out to be pretty jealous of pornography. They don't like their men looking at it. It makes them feel insecure. And yeah, I don't know. So, Ginger, does that, do you ever hear about that?
That's one thing that, having shared before, that Prof and I have never really struggled with jealousy. And I always say that with, you know, a slight bit of self-consciousness, because it's not necessarily something I have to try hard to do, because I just don't think I'm wired that way. And so,
and it's not nice to brag.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I don't mean it that way. So I've never personally experienced that, but we've also never struggled with, you know, the balance of him watching porn or looking at porn, or me watching too much porn and look at, I mean, we do it together a lot, and we do it when we're apart a lot. And it's something that we share with each other. So we've not struggled with it. I have heard friends in, more so I would say in the vanilla world, share that they really feel like porn is for men.
Mm-hmm.
And so therefore, you know, it's something that men get that they don't really get. And so it's unfair. And I'm always one to say, well, there's really great porn out there. You should find porn that you like. And people are shocked, and it's bizarre. But I wonder if some of the jealousy, just the baseline foundational jealousy, is that women tend to grow up thinking that it's something just for men.
My wife never watched porn until we were in the lifestyle, and the sexuality was far more open. So it gave her the opportunity. You know, once I stopped having my little private masturbatory time that we don't talk about ever, I could tell her what we were doing, what I was doing during that private masturbatory time. And then it led to the revelation that there are things like U-porn out there, which is crazy variety of different types of porn. And there's something for everyone who is interested in watching porn on that website. Did you like my disclaimer there?
Well, you know, Ginger, I will have to come out of the closet today as a ex-porn insecure person. I've never in my life been anti-pornography, but I did have a lot of interesting jealousy issues surrounding porn for a long time, which seems at odds with just me in general, because I've
been a polyamorous, practicing polyamorous person since I was 16 years old. I've identified as the word polyamorous since I was 18 years old, and I understand the concept of loving more than one person and being in relationships with more than one person, but for some fucking reason, until not all that long ago, if you think about it, maybe like 5 years ago,
yeah,
I was really insecure around pornography, and I had a hard time kind of bringing it all together.
Was it insecure that your husband was watching it, or insecure at even having it as a potential aid?
So I didn't mind that he watched it. I didn't mind that any of my lovers watched it. It wasn't necessarily just a husband issue. It was kind of a overarching span until, like I said, 5 years ago. Actually, my husband kind of cured me of this.
Well played.
but in general, it was more of an issue of comparing my own body to these women's bodies. And so what I found is, you know, I'm not a tiny kind of Barbie doll type of girl. I don't think that I'm on the other side of things. I don't think that I'm necessarily one of the feeder ladies on the couch either, but you know, I'm somewhere in between. And so what I always
you're way on the opposite side of that. Let's be very honest.
I'm gonna
talk extensively for a moment about how absolutely gorgeous Shirabi Katz is.
And I'm gonna blush now, Ginger.
Body and mind. How about that?
Well, thank you.
And she, you know, if I could have had porn only of Shirabi Katz growing up, I would have been very happy.
Oh, Cooper, you're silver tongued. I'll tell you what.
You know, I got to see Shira on a webcam. I got to see Shira on a webcam last week, and she was all
you
bashful,
did.
Saying, "Oh, Dylan, I didn't put any makeup on. Oh God, I must be a mess." And I'm just sitting there, and I don't think she could see at the time because I think I had my camera off. But I just put my fingers to my temple and just said, whatever's going to keep her on this webcam talking, I'm okay with. So I'm just going to let this go.
I was enjoying it.
Don't say that about yourself.
I didn't say anything bad, but let me get around to it.
Well, I mean,
go on with your thing. I know it's going to get you frustrated.
Right.
Okay, so
Shira, you're cute.
I'm so pink and okay. I'm like sweating and all the compliments.
I love it.
Okay.
I want to take Shira to the ice cream social on Friday.
Excellent.
Share a malted.
But what?
Baby.
You're going to share a malted.
Oh.
With two straws.
That sounds adorable.
We've completely derailed her. Yeah. We need to let her get back.
Restaurant after,
more than ready to get right the fuck
the
back
plate.
On track, guys.
Okay, no more.
Then I won't chime in at how adorable and sweet and cute you are.
Thank you, guys. Okay, we could just cut this whole part up.
No.
So what I was going to say is I would compare my body to the women that my partners would look at in pornography. And I had a really hard time for a long time because I found that my body was not necessarily represented in pornography, and specifically the pornography that they were looking at.
When would about would you say that we're talking what era?
What era?
A few years ago, 5 years ago, 10 years ago. What are we talking about?
Because
porn is different. Porn has evolved since then, I think.
So let's say 2003, 2004.
Okay, so back still in the heyday of, you know, gigantic fake tits, skinny blonde girls porn.
See, Cooper, yeah. You got to remember though that when you're talking about porn from the previous eras, the same thing happened to porn that happened, you know. Or I guess it's still happening with music or certain kinds of art or, you know, a ton of things. It became a race to make the most money at any cost.
Porn was always a race to make the most money at any cost.
But you're going to get the most people interested by appealing to the most people instead of, appealing to certain niches of people that you don't even think exist or don't have any market research on.
And
so, of course, it's going
to
be the...
What appealed to my partners, as well as most people, happened to be some pretty skinny bitches who were very small, and I'm super tall, and these would all
but
be
see,
short, petite, lovely women.
Huh? That's what they thought everybody loved.
We ought to let her finish.
Oh, I'm sure.
So I would have the experience of looking at myself and look at them and being like, if this is what they look at when they're having optimum, like, fantasy time, how can they ever be with me? And I had this fight within myself for a long time. And I think a lot of women have this issue where they're just like, well, how, I can't be that. And then it was a couple conversations with my husband who kind of was able to turn me around, just like, look, babe, I have you. I don't need to look at you on the internet. And he kind of appealed to my polyamorous side. He said, look, there's all these different people out there, and I don't necessarily have a girlfriend that looks like this tiny, beautiful thing, or I don't necessarily have a girlfriend that's this big, beautiful woman over here. You know, I am able to explore what I don't have in the fantasy world through pornography. And so, right.
There's no sense in looking at porn of you and your significant other having sex, because you know you were there. You did it.
Well, I'm not saying that, but I think in general, a lot of men's fantasies work towards, you know, the things that aren't necessarily accessible for them. And so I found just oodles of comfort in that. And from that point forward, I was able to be like, wait, why am I able to be polyamorous in life, but here in this fantasy world, I want to be like queen shit for some reason. And so I was able to kind of work through it. And now, you know, as years have progressed and with the old internet here, things have gotten incredibly diverse, like you were saying, Dylan. So, I mean, people can serve all sorts of fantasies.
Ye old internet. Well, I want to throw some facts out, because I have an infographic in front of me. And I'm going to put a link to this infographic on the site. It's statistics on internet pornography, and it appears well-researched. I looked at all the sources, and they actually have a variety of different sources, and they quote things. So 12% of the websites on the internet are pornographic.
Woohoo.
That's a huge number.
That actually
number.
Seems a little low to me, but okay.
It sounds low to me, too.
Okay, well, it is 24,644,172 sites.
But I've only visited half of them.
Well, and something that's cool is, while we've all been talking, our entire group has been looking at RSS porn, and we've been sending sexy pictures back and forth, which is incredibly distracting. But very sexy.
Distracting or distressing?
Distracting.
Oh, that's what I thought.
I am not distressed in the least.
I was going to say, why are you distressed? This is like normal state of affairs to be sending each other pornographic pictures. Yes.
Well, I do want to build on one of the things that Shira said, and the idea of, you know, I have you, and then the idea of looking at other types of porn. Porn does offer variety that a lot of people can't get elsewhere, but it also offers, I don't want to say education, but it offers ideas for a variety of things you can do within your own life.
Oh, yeah, that's very true. The things I've learned through pornography.
It sounded like there was a description to follow that. I'm curious, what things have you learned through pornography?
I've learned a lot of things. I think I learned how to give blowjobs through pornography. That, and between watching pornography around, I think I was about 15, and I really wanted to learn how to give a good blowjob. And being the studious girl that I was, I went to the web, watched a bunch of porn, tried to watch technique. It was very unsexy. It was very, like, studious. I was looking at, like, ooh, what are these girls doing with their lips? And how much saliva is going there? And how much hand should I be using? And I did that combined with some crazy thing on the internet at the time. There was, like, this 12-page fucking manifesto of how to give a good blowjob. And I printed that out, and I read it over and over again. I was really into the idea of giving a good blowjob. But,
lucky guys.
But yeah, I treated that... I treated it like like a documentary of sorts. I was learning things through pornography.
Well, my wife experienced a lot of the same thing once we started in the lifestyle and pornography was suddenly an okay thing to talk about. We got the Playboy channel and my wife studied it and went from, she'll admit, mediocre to fair blowjob to, to one of the best and most popular amongst our group of friends. blowjobs I've ever had. So it's really impressive how much just the observation of porn can allow for you.
I gotta
because
say,
you don't have to say forgive me for staring.
You know what's funny though is oftentimes you'll hear, and this is something that I have said before, is that if you are watching that traditional old school porn as a man and you're trying to do it like that, you're not going to get very far.
No.
Especially if you're actually trying to make her have an orgasm or help her have an orgasm, because it's, you know, there's the camera angles and there's the legs that are positioned a certain way so you can see the penetration, and it's just, you know, not quite focused on the pleasure of the woman.
I'm going to say men in porn are pretty much selfish assholes, and men don't need to learn how to be selfish assholes. Women in general, from the number of women I have known, need to learn that it's okay to be more excited about sex. And so porn shows women that it's okay to be excited about sex. And it's okay to be excited about things that maybe people have told you are degrading. Because, you know, the more and more I talk to women, in especially in the swinging lifestyle, the more I hear women who want to be degraded, have their hair pulled, have, you know, come on their face. Which I find interesting. Because you look at this from the outside point of view, and you're told that this is what's wrong with porn.
Well, if you know that it's ethically made porn and it's authentic pleasure, then it's easier to go to that headspace of allowing yourself to accept that desire that you might have that comes across as, oh, you know, something that you shouldn't want because you're a strong woman. And, you know, if it's in porn that is questionable, I think that even then it's questionable to take that as a learning experience, I guess, is the best way to put it. But if you know that it's ethically made porn and the women are there because they want to be there and they are actually enjoying what they're doing and they are actually having orgasms, then it's much easier to take that as a learning experience and say, ah, well, I might give that a try because she looks like she's having a good time.
Absolutely.
Now, what would you say about, what do you guys feel about extreme porn, though? You know, stuff that doesn't just depict a couple people, you know, making love to each other.
You mean like the stuff on kink.com?
Yeah, something like that, or even something that even delves into, you know, sexual violence, rape, stuff like that. I mean, do we all kind of try to group that as all one big positive thing, or do we start drawing a line between what we, you know, feel is good porn and bad porn?
I don't know.
I always go back to the how is it made, who's involved. Mm-hmm. If it is truly someone's fantasy and it's true pleasure, even if it isn't my taste, even if it isn't something that I'm comfortable with, as long as they're all doing it consensually and I know that, then absolutely it should be out there. If it's questionable, then I have a hard time even watching or considering watching. I guess the bottom line is I think it should exist, but it needs to be ethically created.
Absolutely. Cooper, you mentioned kink.com. I've actually visited the recording dungeons that they have in San Francisco, and I can assure you all the kink.com stuff is ethically produced and quite wonderful. So,
I know one of our friends on Twitter does stuff with kink.com, and she's the one that led me to the site. And, you know, I've never been a big fan of the more extreme, see, I don't want to use negative words here, like Ginger shared the rough sex videos with me from Tristan Taramino, and it was a big experience for me watching these because they are way outside my comfort zone in terms of what I do and don't do in the sexual environment. But because I knew that they were 100% what these people wanted to be doing, just like Ginger said, ethically produced. And I felt far more comfortable with them. So because I knew this girl online from Twitter who's talking to me about, hey, I love doing this, and this is the most fun thing in the world, and then I watch it, and I can see the excitement in her face when she's being abused. And that's fascinating to me.
I just wanted to ask, because I have some pretty complex feelings about pornography. I love it. I've been defending it for, you know, a few years now, but the turnaround didn't come overnight. I mean, I was just like to what you were talking about earlier, that, you know, we may be ex-Catholics, but it definitely had a bigger boot on my neck than I think it did on yours for a while. And
Catholic was always rebellion. For you, it seems like they gotcha.
They did. They really did. And so I was both unfortunately involved in lots of debate and, you know, activism, anti-porn activism, you know, when I was younger.
Oh, wow.
And I've been counterbalancing that for years by going out and talking and telling people that it isn't this evil thing. It's expressive. It's letting people, you know, or it can be. There's always negative stuff in almost any category, you know, of content in the world, but it doesn't have to be that way. It's all about expanding access instead of limiting choices, you know, limiting choice and making sure that the good stuff that's out there that people want to watch, that people like, that it's going to be out there. But these, you know, anti-porn activists that have been marching around, they've been very vocal lately, and there was finally a study that came out that in the Scientific American just put out an article a few days ago saying that over the last, you know, 10-15 years, because of the proliferation of the internet and greater access to pornography, they're seeing, you know, at least anecdotal evidence that sexual violence has been waning a little bit because of it. And it makes me think that the greater access to this stuff, you know, even the as long as it's ethically produced, even the more extreme stuff has a positive impact on people.
You're making me think of all those XXX church douchebags, Dylan.
Yes.
They are douchebags, aren't
those guys.
They? Well, before we go off on a rant, we're going to have to wrap it up for this episode here. We will be continuing our discussion about porn, including our likes, our specific, what we really get into on porn, and homemade porn. You know, maybe we'll talk about that. Maybe we'll talk about porn we have personally shot of ourselves that exists somewhere. You know, not for you to see, but somewhere.
So, talk about it.
We're going to talk about it, and you'll be very, very excited to hear about it there. So you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/theswingset. You can follow us on Twitter. I am Swingset Life. We have Ginger N the Prof. We have Shira B Cats, and then we have Dylan _Swingset. Follow us all for the Twitter forfecta.
Forfecta.
Quadfecta.
Love it.
There we go.
Love it.
It's a quad thing. You can email us at contact@lifeontheswingset.com. You can give us a call or leave us a text message at 573-55-SWING. That's 573-557-9464. And we at The Swing Set just want to say a special happy birthday to Shara from the Ending the Sexual Dark Age podcast. It is her very special birthday, and I hear she is going to be having spankings on the air on their show.
Yay! So happy birthday, Shara.
We are big fans of Ending the Sexual Dark Age, and we wish...
And big fans of spankings.
And big fans of spanking. So we wish nothing but sexiness for her birthday. So thank you all for joining me on the show this week. And we're going to talk more sexy porn next time on Life on the Swing Set, the podcast. Thank you all for swinging by. When it comes to online dating, you at home have a lot of options available to you. But we here at Life on the Swing Set recommend Cassidy.com. We've tried many websites in the past, and while most are adequate and some are even pretty good, the one that we keep coming back to is Cassidy.com. And there are a few reasons for that. First of all, and most important to me, is ease of use. You want to put a picture on your page? You know how to do it. It's intuitive. It's built in. It's Facebook for non-monogamy. Cassidy also has one of the most aggressive campaigns out there to get the most people all around the world onto the site. Right now, potential playmates are scattered throughout regional websites. Wouldn't it be awesome if they were all in one place so you could search one site and find absolutely everyone you were interested in playing with? Well, that's where the campaign for Cassidy comes in. Cassidy need not be your only site, but we recommend you give it a try. And if you sign up using the link on our page, you support Life on the Swing Set, so we can continue bringing you what's been called the best non-monogamy podcast out there. And if that's not incentive enough, if you join Cassidy, you get to see my wife's tits. How can you argue with that? Cassidy.com. Hey everyone, Cooper here. At The Swing Set, we get a lot of requests on how can our listeners help us out. And there are some big ways you can help us out really easily, and guess what, for free. The number one thing we need you to do is, if you're listening to us through iTunes, go ahead and go to the iTunes store, go to Life on the Swing Set, and rate us and write us a review. Those two things will increase our traffic and will increase our ranking. Very important stuff. If you have an account on Stitcher, we are actually on there now. So Stitcher.com, you can stream us through the Stitcher app on your Android or iPhone. And if you're on there, please rate us highly again. Thumbs up and put us in your favorites. That's also very helpful. Another thing we're looking for right now is, we would like a theme song for Life on the Swing Set. So if you're musically inclined and you'd like to give it a go, we would be ever grateful to have a nice theme song to start out the show. The most important thing you can do for us, though, is share the podcast, share the website with friends, but mostly thank you all for what you already do for the site, which is read it and listen to the show and comment. You are the greatest audience we could ask for. So big sexy thank you from Cooper Beckett over here at Life on the Swing Set. Thanks for swinging by.